Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday at 11 o'clock. And today, I was hoping to say good morning, all excited. You know, it's Rosh Chodesh, it's a special day, beginning of the month, etc. However, I have to say something before we start our show and before we go into our important and fascinating discussion that we're going to have today. There's something sitting on my mind. I've heard, seen, felt hundreds of people in the community this morning feeling like Joburg is different, like we are walking into a very sad, difficult moment, and we are, because as an educational show, we cannot ignore the passing of an amazing educator for over four decades, probably, Maura Joan, as everybody knows her in our community. Maura Joan had passed away this morning, which is something that hundreds of us are feeling: the emptiness, the sadness, her energy, her actual love and passion for every student, the ability for her to live and put life into anyone around her is incredible and will be remembered for a long time. So as Joburg this morning loses one of its top educators, we're remembering, and we are a show that speaks about growing in the future, but we'll never forget the past and who gave us tools and who was there for us. So Maura Joan, you are loved, missed, and please God, it will be a complete journey. Now that you've completed your journey, it will be an amazing next step for you and for the community. Okay, so now that we have acknowledged our pain and our sadness and the loss that we are feeling, we're going to go to our topic of today. So tomorrow is Youth Day in South Africa, and as we do every year, we're going to talk to youth, and we're going to talk to organizations and people that are in that area and have made a difference and are making a difference. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm looking at youth. I'm generally at that age where I feel that everybody my age was born like 20 years after me. So it's nice to meet the youngsters in studio and discuss the different things that they are doing through their organizations, etc. So I'm going to start by introducing our guest today before our important discussion. I'm going to start with you. Good morning, Lumisa. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, give us a minute, a few seconds, a word about yourself. Who are you? Introduce yourself to the listeners.
So my name is Ndumiso Kevin Gwenya. I'm a coding and robotics facilitator at OTSA. I work for the STEM division.
Okay. And Misa.
My name is Misa, and I am the junior marketing manager at Ort South Africa.
Okay, and we're going to continue with our next guest. We have here Bianca Schulman. Bianca, you're not connected. You're going to be connected very shortly. In the meantime, let's say good morning to our next guest, Savannah. Good morning. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I am Savannah, I'm from the JNF, and I am leading their Education and JN Futures Community Engagement Department. And we're really excited to be here and to talk about some of the things going on with the JNF at the moment.
Okay. And good morning to Bianca.
Hi, it's wonderful to be here. My name is Bianca, and I'm the project manager and admin for
JNF. Okay, so let's start, but before we start with the organizations that you are here representing, from ORT South Africa to JNF, I'm going to ask you on a personal level. You know, we know what the youth were fighting for in 1976. We know what was happening then, what the hope for a better future was. What are you guys fighting for today? I'll start with you, Lamisa.
I think today the most thing that we actually are fighting for is level of education and also for employment, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you seeing a direct connection between education and employment?
I do see a gap right there, yeah. There is a definitely huge gap. The reason why I'm saying that is because there are many people who are actually educated but they are unemployed. Hence why sometimes there was once a study that was shown asking why is there a huge gap between people who have education, who are more educated, but they can't get employment. Then it was found that the practical skills that people, or the youth specifically, they need to get employment, they do not have. So now trying to bridge in that gap, it takes a lot. But then, yeah, that's something that we also are doing in Otis A. We have a big data program that's actually trying to bridge that gap.
Now we're first talking about what we're fighting for.
Yeah.
Lumisa, what are you fighting for?
Miesa. Not a problem at all. I would agree that access is something that young people are fighting for. I think very often you look at your predecessors, you look at your parents, your grandparents' generation, and you think, oh, by this age, I should have had a house, or at this age, I should have hit certain milestones. And I think economically, it's becoming a lot more difficult to reach milestones that were set for generations before you. So access to education, access to employment, access to opportunity, being able to break into the market, not hit a glass ceiling, has become something that youth are fighting for. Recognition, to be seen and to be valued, to know your voice is valued as well within the society, that people aren't overlooking us just due to age. And we're fighting for experience and the opportunity to gain experience, because we can't gain exposure, we can't gain employment without an organization, a person taking a chance on us to be able to do that. So, yeah, opportunity.
Are you saying that an individual without a backing of an organization in today's South Africa can find a job?
You know what, if I may use myself as an example.
Yes.
Right. I feel my story is a little bit different to a lot of beneficiaries that have come out of South Africa. My mother's privately educated abroad. My parents grew up in England. My grandfather was a doctor for the World Health Organization. I was privately educated. I went up to my master's level. I assumed I would get a job as soon as I came out of school. And I was wrong, right? And I felt my parents did everything right. My grandparents did everything right. I did, and I followed the formula that was set before me. And I still didn't get that backing. And it took ages to be able to get some sort of recognition. But the moment I did get a chance and an organization did say, we'll give you some experience, we'll give you an opportunity, I was able to get a career. I wasn't just able to get a job. So, yeah, I do think that there is responsibility on the part of organizations, businesses, whether you're an SMME, whether you're a larger corporation, that in order for youth to have a chance at access in this world, you need to take it upon yourself to also equip that generation with the experience you want your employees to have.
Wow. You left me with so many questions and so many points. But we're going to introduce the other guests, and then I'm going to come back to you because, wow, do I have a lot to say in comment? I guess I am old. Okay. Bianca, what you see the youth today. What are you fighting for?
I think the youth today are fighting for a number of things. I completely agree that they are fighting for education and the gap between education and employment. I think, much like our forefathers, we are also fighting for equality. We are also fighting for a space where we have clean water and we have good electricity, and those things are not affecting our businesses so that they can employ more people. We need safe spaces for people to be able to walk around and not feel that they are going to be harassed, or they are going to be hurt in any way, or if they are hurt in any way, that the police will believe them and be able to do something. I think safety is a huge thing, especially in South Africa. And I think if those types of things are solved, then a lot of the crisis around education and employment are able to be solved, because it's a knock-on effect. I think really, if we were to solve the problems that are historical, we would be able to move into a much better future.
But then also you're talking about the technicalities of making sure you have water and electricity and functionality of a nation. Okay, so we do need to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to ask the same question actually to Savannah, and then we'll come back with a few more questions and topics, because you guys are really making me feel old.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we have started a fascinating discussion about youth, as Youth Day is coming in tomorrow. And I'm here with some youth from ORT South Africa organization and marketing, developing, coding, etc., as well as two youngsters that are actually in charge of educating the next generation and running those programs from the JNF. And right before the break, I've asked most of them, what is the youth fighting for today? And Savannah, what are the youth fighting for today?
So as someone who has a background in education and has taught for a few years, I would say I've been exposed to a lot of like on the ground experiences of the kids of today. And I would say that fighting for that education is the most vital thing. Fighting for the ability to move forward through your school career and then be able to matriculate and hope that you are going to be given that access to higher education and going to university. And like my fellow interviewee said, assuming that you are going to have a job when you come out of university. And a lot of the foundations are laid from school into high school and as well as at university as well. A lot of people are expecting to graduate and then immediately find work, and it's adding to that problem of so many more people who are unemployed because they are graduating with amazing qualifications and they aren't being given the opportunity to actually become part of our society of working South Africans. And I would say fighting for the reassurance that you are going to be able to find a job and you are going to be able to use all the skills and the knowledge you've gained over the years of being educated and put that towards your career one day.
Okay. So here's where I'm trying to figure out by the cost of being, as I said again, too old. Number one, the youth in 1976 that we are remembering, they weren't asking to get an opportunity, they were taking an opportunity. And their mindset was to take an opportunity, to take control, to take their own matters in hands and responsibility. And sometimes I feel like we are in a reality that we're waiting to get an opportunity instead of taking. You know, Misa, you said about, and you mentioned as well, Savannah, about assuming you'll have a job. What do you mean assuming you'll have a job? I remember growing up, you know, we had to fight for jobs and we had to worry about it. And how am I going to find a job? And where am I going to get a job? And what am I going to do to get a job? And what's going to be? And I do feel like we're kind of assuming we'll have a job. And maybe that's part of the challenge. You know what? The third question I'm going to keep for after the answers. Who wants to go first on this one? Okay.
I don't mind going first. So I can agree with you about taking opportunity. I don't think you get reward almost without risk. And when something isn't going in the direction that you're hoping for, you obviously need to take charge and take some direction. But there also needs to be jobs to fight for in the same breath, right? Unemployment rate is what, at 60% now? And when I come out of university and I'm fighting for an entry-level position, totally fine. But now there's someone who has a matric fighting for the same position, and they're going to lose out from a job, let's say a call center job that used to be usually for people who didn't have a bachelor's degree. Now that's going to people with a bachelor's degree. Now someone with just a matric, where do they fall? And there's almost a displacement of where young people belong and how you move and what your upward trajectory can be. So I do agree that the job market is supposed to be a competitive space. Obviously, you fight for opportunity, you send your application in, but there also needs to be the opportunity existing for me to fight for at the same time. I understand that where there is no opportunity, some people say cultivate it for yourself. Entrepreneurship, start something if something isn't being created for you. But in the same breath, when there is a lack of resources like you often have in global South countries, it does become a little bit difficult.
It does become a little bit difficult. I agree with that. And I do hear what you're saying about the lack of job opportunity. Mm. When we look in history, when we look in further times, the average person did not get a job. They started doing what they know. If they're a carpenter, they started working with wood. And if they are they understand how to build stuff, they started building. And if they understand how to plant and grow, they started doing things. And it's almost like the majority, in a way, were business entrepreneurs, which we've kind of lost. And the world has shifted towards employment instead of towards running your own business and doing your own profession, which is a question do we need to relook at that? Because if there isn't opportunity and if there isn't jobs, then use your talent and do something with it. So I'm going to ask you, because I know this is something that OR does deal with. Let's say we have a youngster that does have that opportunity. And by the way, I do see there are a lot of youngsters that have the ability to create content, to go online, to start their own business and following and talking and whatever it is that they do. So there is that ability and opportunity in a way. But if somebody has an idea and they're all ready to launch their business, but they don't even know where to start, they don't even know what to do. So that's where maybe an organization can come into play. And if we go practically, your organization, do they come into play in that regard?
Oh, absolutely. I wish my colleague Rafilwe was actually here to elaborate on that, because she is a business coach herself. She works on that project. So we have things like the Level 2 AADF project with OUD South Africa, where it's business development. We do business coaching. You can come with just an idea. You don't know what you're going to do, but you know you're good at this thing and you can come with an idea and people will help you develop the business plan, tell you the foundations of business that you need to be looking at and what your starting point is, and even help you when it comes to conversations about startup capital and managing finances. I think the biggest issue that we come across is often exposure and the knowledge, and also resources and understanding where to gain those resources. Sometimes there's a barter system involved. Sometimes it's just about learning negotiation skills. But that's where OUD South Africa does come in. So it creates a support structure and a coaching system to bring these young people into the entrepreneurial space and they can level up.
Help them manage it, which we'll get to later on. We'll ask her to act on that. So Bianca, hearing what's discussed here and what the youth are fighting to do, what's today's struggle? How is that fitting in with your curriculums and what you're creating?
If I can go back just to talk to what you were speaking about right now, I've actually worked extensively in recruitment, so I see it from the other side. When I put out a job online, I will get 500, 1,000, 2,000 CVs from people. So when people are saying youth are fighting for a job, you're fighting against a global fight. Because work can be remote, it's not so much anymore where you can walk into a shop and give in your physical CV. You're being compared in multiple different ways to thousands of people. And also, I mean, just to speak to it,
which in my eyes is more of an opportunity, because when we look at what people are earning in America and what they're earning here or in other countries, if you're competing in the online sector, then you can find reasonable jobs with salaries that people can't live with in other countries that you can live with over here?
Potentially. Often those countries will look at us as a way to say we can pay them less instead of paying our own countries. So we get paid the same as we would get paid by other South Africans, but just by an American company. But also just
to have more opportunity.
Potentially. But it's a bigger fight. There are more people you're competing against. Just to also say, if we're talking about a 50%, 60% unemployment, that those jobs just don't exist, those people cannot get jobs, even if people are starting their own companies, it can be really difficult because as an economy, there isn't enough money to go around to help people support. Your friends may be very supportive and like your content and share your content, but they might not actually be able to buy it from you. So we actually have to increase the economy overall to be able to give everyone more opportunities.
Okay.
But to answer your educational questions.
So what are you doing for that?
We focus on environmental. JNF is an environmental organization, primarily. And we do, we have a center called WESEC, the Walter Sisulu Environmental Center in Mamelodi. We also have a center in KZN. And we teach youth skills for gardening, for which they can take back home. We have gardens for pensioners as well, and we gather a lot of information. We have about 10,000 people who come through the center, youth who come through the center every single year, and we give them skills so that in a very practical way they can feed themselves, and that I think is a primary importance to the youth.
Okay, and how do the youth react to that? I'll go to you, Savannah, considering that they are all connected to social media and to the internet world, and they see the luxury of the world, and you come and say to them, I can help you make sure you have food. What is the reaction?
So I think it varies based on how much exposure certain kids have. you know, a lot of what happens in the world is portrayed on social media, and that's really what the kids are seeing. They're not really seeing the reality of a lot of things, because a lot of things on social media aren't really what things are at face value. So I think your reactions might depend on the kids, but I would say when they are coming to the center and when they are experiencing what we have to show them, it's a bit of a reality check, I think. It's a bit more of an eye-opening experience for them, where they can see these are actually practical skills that I probably won't be able to get off watching a TikTok video of someone saying, watch a day in my life of something. So I think it's more practical skills and showing them these are issues that are happening and these are some practical ways on how you can help yourself using the skills that we've provided.
And people are reacting and interested in going down that route, or do you have to actually convince, show, recruit, or is it actually people are waiting for an opportunity to learn how to look after their at least feeding needs?
I think it does depend on the community, the environment that you're in, because sometimes it does take from our side more of a, let me tell you why this is important, let me show you why you need to know this information. So it can be more of a convincing, but a lot of the times it's just showing them the reality of this is what our, the situation of our world, our climate, our environment, and kind of making them aware. And I think a lot of kids are aware, a lot of the youth are aware, they just don't know how to implement things. They don't know, they aren't empowered to do things for themselves. They know that there are issues environmentally. They just, I think from a like a youth standpoint, they just don't know how to tackle the problem as youth.
Let me see, you're hearing Savannah. You're a youngster, you're doing well, coding, etc. Something that I do think that your age has a bit more of advantage in working and creating. But also at the same time, we look at it as maybe one of the bigger risks when it comes to AI and future, etc. And you hear Savannah, you hear Bianca about what they're offering. Knowing you, knowing your friends, the people around you, would that something that would cross your mind to say, oh, I should learn about that, I should invest in that? Or you're in the technology world, that's the hope where all the youth are potentially hoping to get to, and this is not necessarily your language?
Personally for me, it actually is my language, because I come from KZN, where mostly we mostly focus on agriculture. So definitely, that's something I would definitely go and invest into.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. So there is room even for people that have jobs and professional to come and learn and to have this as a backup.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So I see you're saying yes, Bianca. Do you have percentages of people that actually do have jobs that still come and do this?
I don't have percentages on that. I can't speak to that. But I do know from personally interacting with people, several people who have businesses or work in employment, whatever they do here, and go home and have other businesses that they run. They have agricultural businesses. They have far more community-based things, and I think somewhere like Joburg necessarily offers. I think a lot of what we do is offering community spaces that really allow people to grow through meeting other people and through growing skills. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important.
Where that comes, it's amazing. Okay. If I'm not mistaken, JNF does have someone that is actually based in KZN.
We have an environmental center in the KZN, as well.
And that works
the
strongly.
Dates Foundation.
Yes. Yeah. So going back to youth, okay, and the third question I was going to ask based on what you said, but I'd love to hear what you think. When I look at my I'm going to leave myself out of this, my parents and my children, okay? I look at my parents' generation. When they got together, my fathers and mothers, and started a family, they started with very minimal stuff, and they built their wealth over time. They built their homes, they built their careers, they built their finances, and they worked very, very hard without almost any enjoyments. I don't think they went to a restaurant maybe once a year for whatever, for some big celebration. No restaurants, no, some of them didn't drive. It wasn't a luxurious life. Then I watch our children who and I'm saying children up to 30, 40 maybe even, who leave home, get into a relationship, and expect to live in the same lifestyle that their parents live. Almost like they're equal. I don't see huge gaps between youngsters and adults in the lifestyle and availability. And I ask myself, well, these people built their wealth for 30 years. These people are starting their career today. How is it possible to expect to live on the same level? Restaurants is common with youth today. Going out for enjoyments is common with youth today. Flights, people never flew. It was like high level and for people with a lot of finances. And today you see youth flying, you see things happening. And I almost come to that, as youth, do you feel you're being realistic? Sorry for the brutal question. You're brave. Lisa, go for it.
You know, I've asked myself that question, if I'm being 100% honest.
Thank God. I don't think most of you guys ask that question.
That question regularly. And it's not lost on me the sacrifices that my grandparents made and my mother made as well. I think enormous sacrifices have been made. But those sacrifices were also made with the expectation that it needs to be a little bit easier for the next generation. So my grandfather sends his kids to the UK to be educated so that it's a bit easier. They don't have to walk to school like he did barefoot and have to struggle the same way he did. He doesn't want them to have the same story. And then it would be the same thing for my mom, right? But that still shouldn't absolve me. Like, I shouldn't be entitled to access or a certain lifestyle. But there is a standard of living at which I would like to work for and still have the opportunity to gain. I don't want to be in an economy where it is a far-fetched idea to be a homeowner at the age of 36 or 40, actually, rather. I don't want it to be a far-fetched idea. It should be within the realm of possibility economically that if I work hard, I am able to attain certain things.
Correct.
So I think there is a balance in terms of understanding what it takes to get to the finishing line. Well, not the finishing line, but to getting to certain milestones. And understanding that the climate that we live in currently is going to be different to the baby boomers, to Gen X, and it differs from millennial to Gen Z, and what the expectation or the standard of living will also alter. And we need to accommodate that.
So do you think that if a youngster today who doesn't go out to restaurants, doesn't do anything the old generation didn't do, and the flights and everything, do you feel still that it's unrealistic for them to buy a house or to get settled down?
I do, because I'm kind of that person, and I'm working all the time. So
and it's still not happening.
It's still not happening.
If
it wasn't for my parents, I wouldn't have a car. Like, I was gifted a car. And even if I worked constantly, I could probably afford it now, but it would have taken me a lot longer just to get that. And the car was a very big part of my ability to be employed as well. So sometimes this mobility, you know, it calls into question the ability to even afford resources for ourselves to get to the next step and to even get to the next stage of our life. Or even if you want to get a postgraduate degree, I need to be able to afford to do so.
Mm-hmm. What you're saying is very scary, and we're going to go to a break, because the majority of people in South Africa can't buy their kids cars.
Sure.
And that's a very big concern, as you say, and with the opportunity. So I guess after the break, we're going to have to go back to, okay, so what youth, what are you fighting for and how are you fighting for it?
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
1.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and it's really a upbeat, fascinating discussion here with people that are actually working and doing and making things happen, and that are also kind of youth still. And I'm having another guest join us now into this discussion, important discussion. Good morning to
Rifilwe.
Rifilwe.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about you for any of our listeners joining now.
Okay, I'm Rifilwe and I'm a project administrator at Odd South Africa. I help the youth get access to the digital skills and take them through mentorship with businesses. I assist a lot in the level 2, but I work for level 1, which give access to digital skills.
Okay, this show is surprises from beginning to end. You help youth get access to digital
skills.
That's the one thing, if you would have asked me, that youth don't need, I would say they know their digital, but I guess I'm wrong. What is the digital skills that they need to get?
So our courses are accredited under Cisco, IBM, LinkedIn, and we also offer courses under Odd South Africa. So these courses run for a period of 3 months, and I think these courses, every youth of South Africa need to do these courses, to be honest, because I've done them also. I got to Odd South Africa, and I did the courses, and I was like, every young youth, unemployed, employed, you need these courses.
What are the tools you get from these courses?
So, firstly, they are free, right? You get free data. Yes, they're free. We just need your time. We need your time. We need your dedication and your commitment to complete these. It's a 3 month course, and we need you online, because everyone has access to online. As much as
is it? I had many people from townships on the show who told me that's not the case, and that there's a big problem in South Africa with access to online and to. But you're saying that you're seeing increase in that ability.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We have access to online. We might be unemployed. We might be coming from a disadvantaged background, but we have access to online. But we don't use the online to our to gain positively. To work positively, to empower ourselves.
Yes,
we entertain ourselves. We go to TikTok, do all these things. But if you use your time in searching on what to do online to empower yourself as a youth of South Africa, trust me, you will get a whole lot of access to. Obviously, Odd South Africa is one of those organizations. There are a whole lot of organizations that offer digital skills program to empower yourself and to get yourself employable.
Okay, so the tools that you need for online, or that will be an advantage to get employed, are?
Sorry?
What are the skills that you're actually teaching for people that want to get employed?
We have, the first one that I can say is it computer hardware basics. That one, to access your computer, get through your computer, go around, how to go to your Google Classroom, to your Teams, to your WhatsApp. We use those tools to take you through these courses. But also we have your cybersecurity, we have your IoT, we have your, there are so many. Yes, we have your Canva.
Okay.
You have your video for those who want to do start businesses or grow their businesses. We have your professional soft skill, that one that will bring you to a market of corporate. You get to work, but you don't know how to go around the workspace. That teaches you on how to work, go in that place to show up and work professionally, because you may employ me, but when I get to the workspace, will I be able to stay in the workplace and do my job? So because we, as the youth, as much as we want jobs, we want the access, we will get that. But am I ready to be in a space where now I need to work, I need to deliver? So these courses help you to how to take care of yourself at the workspace, how to present yourself, how to go around the workspace, how to communicate professionally, how to write an email professionally. So those are the things that we offer in these courses.
Okay. When we look at what we're talking about for Tomorrow Youth Day at 1976, for example, compared to today, then we saw youth fighting for the opportunity. Here I'm hearing so much about organizations offering it to the next generation. Are we still seeing youth fighting for the opportunity?
No.
Okay.
No.
We'll go around. Yes, what do you think?
I think there is, I want to say this in the gentlest way possible.
No, don't. I haven't been gentle. That's fine.
I think there is a widespread apathy that has become pervasive amongst the youth of South Africa. And I think sometimes when we live in a bubble, and I think I've grown up in a bubble, if I'm being 100% honest, where my exposure hasn't been all that limited, and I feel like, oh, okay, things will turn out a particular way for me. But if I'm coming from a place where there's no water, where there's no service delivery, if I'm coming from a place where it was a struggle for me just to get shoes to go to school, and sometimes I think, I have 60 more years of this. Mm. And I don't know what to do sometimes. And when people around you aren't always mobilizing, and I know it's easy to say we need to fight for it, but the thing that also drives people to fight is the support to fight, if someone's willing to fight next to you. But if I'm doing it alone and I feel alone, even if I'm not alone, but I feel alone, you become a little bit hopeless. So I think it's hard to avoid an apathetic youth or an environment of apathetic youth these days, especially when you go into underserved communities, communities where there's pervasive drug addiction, pervasive unemployment, a lack of just resources. It's difficult to fight your way out of that, because first you're fighting your way out of that environment. Then I have to fight for access into a new space in order to help the people back in my previous environment. And there's so much weight on my shoulders. That's how I feel as a young person. Sometimes you just want to give up, I suppose. Not that they should.
I'm not sure that the youth in 1976 had more hope or had more water and electricity and, you know, everything. And they still fought. Where I do see a difference is the separation, and when you're in a nation that has to do it as an individual instead of the support, almost like we've moved from the Rainbow Nation to the individual's group of people, which I wish we had more time and you would have brought that up earlier, because it's an amazing point. But we do need to take a break, and maybe we'll see afterwards if anyone wants to comment in the final question that I'm going to ask you all at the last part of the show after the break. Short break, we'll be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back and we're really at the last part of the show. And as we do every week in this show, the last question I ask my guest is the same question for probably about a decade. And I'm going to ask you the same question and give each of you about 30 seconds to answer. And my question is, on a personal level, what do you wish and hope that we do different or we know for a better future for South Africa and for our culture? Rafaelo.
Yes, sorry. I will start by saying, where you are is where you start. Where you are is where you get access. Where you are is where you create. Where you are is where you grab what's there for you, because we have everything here and we are seeking this and we want access to this. But where you are, you can be able to get in that space. And with the little hope that we still have, we can pull through.
And we'll change our little hope to big hope. Please, God. Misa.
To avoid the risk of sounding like a socialist, but community, community, community. I don't think we can achieve what we need to achieve if we are not supporting one another. The way that we managed to hit 1994, get freedom, fight for equality, was because we band together for a single cause. And we need to have the mindset for South Africa like that across the board. We should be tackling things together, not as individuals, as we said before. So that's my big thing, community.
Community, and please God, your voice will be multiplied and we will have more of a community. Lumisa.
I'll definitely will agree with what Miss actually said. Community, very much important. They say it takes a village to build a person. And even though Rome was not built in one day, but it wasn't one person who built Rome, though many people were building Rome. And one other thing, I'll also encourage the youth is actually do research. Research is very much important. Sometimes you might have the qualifications and whatnot, but you might find out that actually the skill set that you actually need for to back up that qualification, you still need to go out there and get those things. So definitely do research and reach out, actually. If you need assistance in however you need assistance from, reach out to organizations like OTSA and also organizations from our interviews that are right here. Reach out. There's a lot of opportunities.
And stay up to date, reach out.
Most definitely, yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
you can. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you. Bianca.
It's so interesting. Such a powerful question. I think there's so much we can learn from the past. I just want to say my grandfather, probably 80, 90 years ago, came as a refugee from Eastern Europe, and Ortjet actually helped set him up. And so Ort helped my family.
And you're paying back to South Africa. It's amazing.
Absolutely. But I think there's so much we can learn from people who are refugees, people who've started from nothing. And South Africa absolutely can build. the Jewish community has built themselves up so much, and I believe South Africa and our youth can take that as hope that they can build. They if they put in the work and the effort and the belief and the hope, and they really think through problems and they think, this is a problem, I can solve a solution, absolutely we have a future.
Amazing. Savannah.
So I also want to comment on the community aspect of it, and also just a note to mental health and mental awareness as the perseverance of the youth to not give up, no matter how hard it is, no matter how many challenges and obstacles they are going to face. Mental health is a really strong factor and something that isn't always accessible to communities, especially in underprivileged communities around South Africa. So that sense of community and support amongst, whether it's university peers or family or colleagues, the support network is so important, and just perseverance through the obstacles and just knowing that once you have overcome those things, that's the movement towards the better future.
Amazing, which connects to hope, as we said, and we can do it. It can happen. It will happen. So before I say thank you to all of you for being here today, I am going to acknowledge, I hope she doesn't kill me, Michaela Brown, who's been doing amazingly behind the scenes videoing and doing all the work here. So although you haven't spoken, but it's good to see people keeping busy and managing to stay and make things happen. So thank you for that. Thank you to all of you, for Savannah, Bianca, Misa, Lumisa, Rafaelwe, is that correct? Rifilwe. And thank you for being with us today. Thank you for this discussion. And please God, next year when we talk about the youth, we'll have better things to say and things to grow from and grow with. And thank you to JNF for all the amazing work you do. Thank you, Art South Africa, for all the amazing thing you do. Thank you, Senna, for putting these interviews in place, as usual. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. Thank you to our listeners for being with us week after week. Find us on the podcast if you missed anything, and even if you didn't, it's very important to hear. Stay safe. Enjoy so many shows that you're going to have throughout the week. Great, great, great shows happening. A lot to listen to, and we will be back next Monday at 11 o'clock, as we do every week. Stay safe, and have a good Rosh Chodesh, beautiful week.